VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello, I'm Gab Marcotti, and I'm speaking to you from Warsaw with the latest game podcast from Euro 2012. I'm joined today on this rather sad and morose day for England fans. I'm joined by Ollie Kay and Matt Dickinson. We're going to be previewing the semi-finals, Italy-Germany and Spain-Portugal. And of course, we're going to be asking where it all went wrong with England. Dicko, let's start with you. I thought you wrote a very sort of lucid post-mortem today in the Times. Not that Ollie's writing wasn't equally lucid, but did you write this beforehand and had it ready just in case England didn't go through?
God, I just can't believe you suggest such a thing. No, to be honest, big nights in terms of practicalities. I normally have a swirl of thoughts in my head, you're thinking ahead, but giving it some thought. But then we've been covering, living with England for 24/7 for the last X weeks, so you've got some sort of some opinions formed, some observations gathered, some information gleaned. So I was attempting to do some sort of part report on the night and part post mortem on the end of this little journey, which I think has contained some positives. Man management from Hodgson has been very shrewd. He's done some good things, but I think we've possibly as a country and as a press got a little bit happy clappy in the last few weeks, and that was always likely to bite us in the end.
Ollie, I tend to agree with Dicko about the happy clappy part. What struck me was in that game how one-sided it was, and how a lot of the adjustments that I expected Hodgson to bring, because after all he is supposedly the shrewd tactician, but they didn't do them. And I think somebody pointed out that, in the three group games, England hadn't faced somebody playing with two strikers, and England hadn't faced somebody with a deep-lying playmaker who would dink balls over the top. And he just simply didn't make any adjustments for that in the 90 minutes. Am I clutching at straws here, or is this a fair criticism of Hodgson?
No, I think that is a fair criticism. I think if you look at the type of manager Hodgson has always been, he's always been tactically rigid rather than tactically flexible. He's not been one really to make significant adjustments either before games or during games. He generally sort of regards rigidity as a good thing and a virtue and something for his team to work on. So at times that will work better for his team, that they've got a structure that they're so familiar with, and at times it will mean that they're perhaps not, that there's no plan B or that there's very limited sort of changes made to suit the opposition or to address the opposition. And I thought England really played into Italy's hands, and I'm not really blaming Hodgson for that. I think his tactical rigidity has probably served England. It's been more of a positive than a negative over the course of the tournament, but I just thought England didn't have enough technically, physically or tactically last time.
Dicko, did you subscribe to the Ollie Kay thesis, and did you expect England to be so bad on the night?
Not so bad. I mean, I thought, I was pretty sure Italy would dominate. You know, if you'd have asked me before, and I'd have said it'd be sort of feel like a 60-40 game. So in, was it a 68-32 game or whatever it was? You know, Italy were more dominant than we expected. Should obviously have had the game sewn up well inside 90 minutes. I'm probably... understand and agree with a lot of what Ollie's saying, in the sense that there's mitigation. When you looked at the England squad, you didn't feel exactly blessed with the options that would allow Hodgson to vary his tactics hugely. I mean, you look at the central midfield options, we always generally come back to the midfield balance, and it wasn't as if you thought, great, you know, let's use Jordan Henderson in a clever role, or, you know, Phil Jones is the third, you know, is the Busquets of England. I mean, you know, those things aren't true. So that is the great fascinating debate that moves on now from this tournament, as to whether, you know, we have seen Hodgson's blueprint, imprint, template of England for the next 4 years, or whether, you know, we are going to see a more progressive team develop. And there are a few reasons for a little bit of scepticism about that.
Dicko, what I struggle with is, I mean, I refuse to believe that this is what Hodgson wants to do. This is his vision of England, because you don't have the players with the mentality for it, because at club level, none of these guys play like that. At club level, they try to take the game to the opposition. You have quality players supposedly coming back from injury at some point, like Jack Wilshere, who would be a fish out of water if you ask him to just sit back, run and defend. And also, Hodgson doesn't play this garbage with West Brom, does he?
Well, no, but there's a lack of, I mean, I don't, you know, he never intended to sit that deep. I mean, it seems, I mean, there's so many things to be discussed about why they sat so deep. Was it because John Terry, you know, there's a couple of times in the first half when they played a higher line and Balotelli just ran, you know, the dink ball over the top, allowed Balotelli to run on, which of course then makes slow centre halves panic and drop deeper. And as soon as they drop deeper, obviously the whole team generally drops deeper when they're under orders to be compact. So, you know, was it an issue of the centre halves, doing it for their own protection? Was it simply an issue of the central midfielders were both knackered after, you know, by half time? So, were they, you know, was it an issue that they just simply couldn't get enough of the ball to dictate it? Was it partly because Pirlo is just such a class act? I don't think it was by deliberate design, that England were so lacking in any control of territory, possession, tempo. I don't think that's the case. But it's just going to be interesting to see, you know, just how much variety Hodgson does bring to it. And in terms of tactics, I think, you know, he will change the manpower and hope that changes the emphasis of how England play. You know, bringing Wilshere in will make a difference to that level of control that we hopefully have. But at the same time, you know, we sat and talked today about, we look to Rooney to be our saviour all the time. We can't just look to Jack Wilshere to change the entire rhythm and tempo and shape of England's football, because we just can't get hung up on single individuals. You know, that's not good enough.
Well, especially when those single individuals haven't kicked the ball in anger in more than a year. Ollie, let's try to get some positives. Of the, shall we say, older, or I guess the guys we expect to be the veterans for England going forward. Obviously, Joe Hart will be back because he's still young. And I'm assuming Wayne Rooney will be back despite his difficult tournament. Will Terry and Steven Gerrard be back, and should they be back?
Well, Steven Gerrard was asked that question at the press conference today and said, sort of without any hesitation, he wants to continue and keep playing as captain. And he's 32. Obviously, he'll be 34 by the time next World Cup comes around, but he's clearly keen at least to set off on that road again in September. So that's, I think, England haven't got anything like enough good young players to be ushering people like Gerrard towards towards retirement, so I'm pleased by that. John Terry and Ashley Cole are sort of slightly less clear situations. I mean, Ashley Cole is on 98 caps and has will go down as a great England player. People are thinking, well, he wouldn't turn his back on number 100, would he? But he's never really been the type of player that would, or type of person that would covet something like that as an end in itself. So I would be interested to find out sort of over the coming days whether Ashley Cole will carry on. And John Terry, well, that is a very, very unclear situation because he's got, as we all know, he's got a situation coming up at Westminster Magistrates Court on, I think it's the 9th of July.
But leaving that aside, what's your opinion? If you were in Hodgson's shoes, would you bring these guys back?
Yeah, I would. I don't think England have got enough good players to be ushering people like Terry and Cole towards the exit. I mean, they've got Leighton Baines, who's a very good left-back, but I still think Ashley Cole has been one of England's better performers at these finals. I think likewise of John Terry. And we do seem to get this every couple of years. It's let's get rid of the old guard. Let's get all the youngsters in. But as we've seen the last 2 years, even when there are talented youngsters, you can't bank on them being in a position to influence tournaments in 2 years' time. I mean, you look at Wiltshire's injuries, and you look at injuries to Walker and Smalling and people like that. You look at how someone like Rodwell and someone like McEachran haven't had the opportunities really to kick on as people imagined. And I think rather than sort of making grand statements about how older players should be kicked out and we should all move on, I think we've got to be pragmatic and go with them for as long as they remain the best.
I think on the centre-half, I do think the sweeping statements for the sake of it can often be self-defeating, as Steve McLaren will attest over Beckham. But in centre-halves, I think we've got Smalling and Jones, who should be the future centre-halves of Manchester United. I mean, Jones has been shunted all over the place, but is seen as a centre-half and should be a centre-half. I think you've got Cahill, who played in the last couple of months at Chelsea far better than I thought he was capable of. You've got Lescott, who had a pretty decent tournament, and Jagielka. So I, on that case, I would certainly be looking beyond Terry. Whatever happens in courtrooms this summer, I think it's time to move on.
But Lescott and Jagielka are not much younger than John Terry. I mean, talk about sort of time to move on.
He's got physical issues as well. I'd be amazed if he is in considering the physical problems he's had. I just don't believe that in another 2 years' time from now he's going to be in great physical shape. What speed he's got is be 33 by then. And I say I do think that issue of pace and mobility was, I don't want to be critical of John Terry, so I think he had as good a tournament as could be hoped, but I do think that issue of pace is one that is something that has to be discussed, that England were dropping deep because of alarm of the lack of pace at centre half.
It's interesting because I picked up the Italian sports daily Gazzetta dello Sport, the digital copy, of course, today, and they had John Terry as England's man of the match last night, which might be debatable, and they also just kind of assumed that this whole everybody retreat way, way back was part of Hodgson's game plan, as I did, maybe because they couldn't imagine that John Terry could just kind of dictate the tactics for the whole team on the pitch without,
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Green light, but not to be negative, I'd like you both to single out two performers for England throughout the course of the tournament that give us hope, or to give you guys hope for the future. Ollie, two nice big positives for England.
Well, unfortunately, the names I'll be inclined to single out are older players, Terry and Gerard and Lescott and Cole. So if you wanted me to look beyond those, I would say Joe Hart would be one. I don't think he was sort of a match winner. And yeah, people might say, well, he didn't save a penalty, but generally goalkeepers don't save penalties. I think Buffon only saved one, didn't he? I'd say Joe Hart was a positive. And if you're looking for me to go further than that, I would say it's good that Welbeck and Carroll have at least both played and both scored in a major championship. I don't think they're yet at the level where they would be able to carry an England forward line, but I would say that their contributions were positive in some small way.
Dicko?
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is another interesting one. I know that they think he has an X factor, which they see on the training pitch and didn't transmit to games, where he looked edgy, he was making mistakes of nervousness. And I think they think that, you know, he just needs a couple of, you know, hopefully it's sort of Moldova away type games, San Marino at home type games, where he will, you know, he will feel more relaxed. He'll, you know, all that good work will be seen on the first team, not just on the training pitch, because I think they think he is, you know, undoubtedly of international calibre and say has a certain X factor that they really are excited about. I think it's going to be interesting because I think he's actually got the potential to play a midfield role, not just a sort of winger type role. I think he's just got the physique. I think he's got the ability to sort of, and I think at Arsenal they see him that way as well. So I think that, you know, he's an interesting one to watch, I think.
Dicko, by my reckoning, it's one win in seven. I think that's right. On penalty kicks for England, and I think by my count, I think I'm right in saying you've been there for six of them, and obviously, and I think you were there for the one which England actually won against Spain at Euro 96. Of the ones where England lost, did you ever go into them thinking England are going to win this? Have there been any ones in the ones you've seen?
I thought 2004. I mean, I think, you know, you are dictated by, to a degree, by the mood of, you know, that particular game or, you know, that particular sort of tournament. And 2004 felt like England had a bit of momentum. I mean, certainly until Rooney went off injured in that game. So I think in 2004, I remember feeling that was the one that I felt sort of gutted at the end of, because I thought the team had equipped and themselves reasonably well and had a chance, if they got through that game, of actually kicking on in the tournament. So yeah, that one hurt. Last night it was weird. I mean, you couldn't feel rage, you couldn't feel cruelty, you couldn't feel injustice. You know, you always wonder whether there's a sort of moral sort of sense weighing on the players that, you know, blimey, we know we're lucky to even be here, and that sort of affects their penalties.
Final point on this, and it's more of a personal thing with myself, between me and Mr. K. Ollie, I recall a few years ago discussing former West Ham star Alessandro Diamanti and you labeling him a flake, and of course he hit the post and then the Flake scored the key penalty. Do you think it's a case of him growing up, or do you think it's everything he learned at West Ham which allowed him to progress to a European semi-final?
So the occasion that he hit the post, would you not call that an overhead cross? Because I would. I was impressed by him when he came on last night, and he did a good job against a very tiring England team that were giving him and his teammates a lot of the ball, and set pieces and dead balls. He's always been very good. He's got a very good left foot, and converted his penalty well. So he deserves credit. He certainly showed a lot more than probably any of the various England attacking players on display. And I also eat some humble spaghetti over Balotelli, but not very much. I thought he played with maturity for once and had a good performance, but I don't know whether he's got another two of those performances in him at this tournament, but I thought he exceeded expectations in terms of playing maturely and leading the line well.
Yeah, it's true. I think if I'm not mistaken, on Balotelli, somebody on TV made the point before the game, what has he actually ever won? Which I thought was kind of an asinine thing to direct at somebody who's 21 years old, but still in his young age has already won an FA Cup, a Premier League title, and of course, a Champions League. But on to the semis, Spain against Portugal. Dicko, we think of Portugal as a one-man team. Cristiano Ronaldo, they're not a one-man team because they also have a heck of a central defensive partnership in Pepe and Bruno Alves. That said, logic suggests Spain all the way, right?
Not all the way. I think this one could be close, to be honest. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be fun. I mean, Ronaldo, those last two performances have just been colossal. And, it's just great, isn't it, when a tournament sees one of its greatest stars blossom, and particularly one who's had such stick in the first two matches. You're right, they're not a one-man team. Moutinho has looked superb as well, but they don't feel like a one-man attack at times. Spain are going to be incredibly wary. I think Spain, we've seen, they beat a very, very comfortably beat a tame France side the other night. But I think this one's a close call, I have to say.
Ooh. Ollie, are you lining up with Dicko, or do you actually see that, Spain's centre-forward or strikerless team debate and everything, the fact that they get criticised for passing the ball too much and boring neutrals, it's all just kind of pointless. It's just that they're just so much better than everybody else, and they'll brush Portugal aside just as they've brushed everybody else aside.
Well, they're certainly far better than everybody else they've played so far, except perhaps Italy, but better than everybody else they've played in the last three games. Portugal will pose different tests, and in Ronaldo they will have a player who can perhaps propel them into the final, but I would regard Spain as favourites. I think they're a brilliant team, and I know they've not illuminated the Euros quite in the way that people might have expected them to. I remember we were sort of having similar conversations in the World Cup where they were sort of scraping through, it seemed, while having 75% of the possession. I would say Spain favourites. The Ronaldo factor makes it more interesting, but I certainly see Spain in the final.
Yeah, I personally thoroughly agree with you, especially if Portugal play the way they did against big teams like Germany in this tournament, where they just, I thought, sat way back, invited the pressure, tried to hit at the counter. I think they need to be a little more proactive against Spain. If you do that, you rattle them a bit the way Italy did, I thought, in the opener. Now, the other semi-final is Italy and Germany. There's obviously a long, long, long history there, which includes some of my most cherished memories, of course, 1982 and that semi-final in Dortmund in 2006 and whatnot. Ollie, I'll start with you this time. The script is that Germany are devastating and whatnot, But I want to ask you something which I thought was really quite remarkable. So Germany go out, they win their first three games against pretty tough opponents. Joachim Löw is still not satisfied, and he goes and he changes his entire front three. Out go Lukas Podolski and Thomas Müller and Mario Gomez. In come Marco Reus, Andreas Schürrle, and Miroslav Klose. And note that Reus and Schürrle are not particularly experienced at an international level. Now, it's the kind of thing where it could have blown up really badly in his face. And it's the kind of thing I've never seen from international manager when, you know, who's won three on the bounce. What is this? Does this suggest anything to you?
It suggests that they've got great strength in depth and that he's got great confidence in the players that he's got. And I saw it as him resting Gomez and Gomez in particular and probably Podolski and maybe Müller would have more of a battle to retain his place. But I thought it just showed extreme confidence and justified confidence the way it turned out in the second half. And you know he's got the chance now to switch back or to the previous front three or make whatever changes he wants to make. And when you consider that Italy will have had extra time and two fewer days rest in the first place, I would expect Germany to be very fresh and Italy to be slightly weary. And I would expect Germany to win for that and other reasons.
Dicko, I'm not so sure. I think what he said was that the thing about Podolski and Müller is that they work well on the counterattack, but teams are sitting very deep against Germany, and Podolski and Müller aren't particularly gifted on the ball. And so in the tight spaces, he was maybe better off with Reus and Schürrle. That said, if you're Pradelli, once you recover from your party, from Sunday night, what do you do? How do you face Germany? What do Italy need to do? And I'm sure you will say they need to finish. I would agree with you on that one. But what else do they need to do, and can they do it?
Well, as you say, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, I mean, I don't think they'll have half, maybe even a quarter of the chances that they managed to create against England. So that's the first problem they've got. That, you know, we said it from the start that they've got a lack of. I mean, how many strikers did they lose? Three, potentially four, is it with injury before the tournament? And you know, that's you know, not many squads can cope with that when it comes to the sharp end of a tournament. I think the fatigue factor is going to be huge on them. I think Germany are going to steamroller them personally. I'm far more confident predicting this semi-final than the Portugal-Spain one. I think you boys, I know you've got the weight of history on your side on this one, but I think you're in for a flattening.
Gee, well, thank you, Dicko. But that's fine because, of course, as everybody knows, the European Championships is nothing more than the Carling Cup. The one that really matters is the other one, and we've won that four times, whereas Germany have only won it three times more than Albania. So there. Thank you for listening. I will be back on Friday. In the meantime, you can visit thetimes.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter, and you can also download our neat iPad app. It's kind of like a newspaper with all sorts of whistles and bells and fancy buttons and graphics and all kinds of features. Till next time, bye-bye.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts. Calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.